Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol for an informal on the case numbers PU-20-442 and 21-237. This is relating to some Quest telephone outages in the Amenia area. And this is an informal, so we'll do some introductions first. Sitting with me are my colleagues, Commissioner Randy Crisman and Brian Crosius, and I'll turn it over to them in a minute for opening comments. I don't have any opening comments other than to say that I'm very eager to get some resolution on some of these outage issues, and I hope that we can do that today. We really need to have these things taken care of, so I'm interested in hearing the company's side of this and seeing what we can do to get these things resolved as quickly as possible. Also joining me besides my colleagues are staff Victor Shook, Stacy Averill, and our attorney Brian Johnson. And then I see Paul Sanderson here from the company. If he wants to, are you kind of just listening on in Bismarck, or are you going to sort of run things on this end and then introduce the company?
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm just local counsel, but I could introduce the company.
So, company's preference. I see a couple folks on the screen. Do you want Paul to introduce everyone, or Jason, do you want to take the lead?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. This is Jason Topp from CenturyLink. I also have with me Andy Schreiner. I'm an attorney in Minnesota and have engaged Paul's local counsel in Minnesota, or in North Dakota. Andy has responsibility for legislative affairs issues.
Okay, very good. All right, with that, I'll turn it over, see if Commissioner Crosius has any opening comments.
No comments. No?
All right, then this is in your portfolio, Commissioner Crisman. So would you like to take it over from here?
Yes, thank you. And as you said, I think you've mentioned it. There's really two cases mm-hmm. that we wanted to address today. The ongoing lack of service to some customers out south of Belfield, and then the Amenia case, which is newer but lingering since a few weeks at least. And so why don't we start with the Amenia situation? And other than what I've been told by staff that we have received a number of complaints, people are out and been told by the company that they're waiting on a part and it would be in July till that came. So we're aware of that. I guess the things that I'm particularly interested in is what kind of part is this? Why wouldn't a company the size of CenturyLink have one on hand? If then beyond that, why does it take so long to get it? And then here is what probably set me off the most. The fact that once that had been explained to staff, we continued for a long time afterward to continue to receive complaints from people in that area who told us that their service was out, had been out a long time, and they had called CenturyLink customer service and been told that a technician was coming to check it in a day or two, when the company had already told us that it wasn't going to be fixed for weeks because you're waiting for a part. And to continue to have your customer service people be unaware of the situation and mislead these customers and turn our staff into essentially your customer service reps that are the ones to deliver the bad news is something I find completely unacceptable. And so that's the broad area I'd like to hear about on the Amenia situation.
Would you like me to respond? I'm not certain of the format of this.
Yes, whoever is sure. The appropriate person to answer.
Yeah, this is Jason Topp from CenturyLink. Just first of all, just go over the facts of the outage. This outage happened in Peregain's system, which is located in Amenia, served by the Castleton Central Office, about 11 miles away. It occurred on May 17th. We've got it affecting 21 customers. And it was a problem with power being delivered to these lines. The typical, when that, it's not that unusual of a situation to have something like this come up. And when it does, what happens is you replace card. There's sort of a shelf on which there are cards, which I look to me like sort of circuit boards that deliver the signal to the customer location. Typically, it's those cards that get damaged in one way or another, and you replace those cards, and service gets to the customers. So as soon as the outage occurred, we replaced those cards, and still we're experiencing this issue. It didn't resolve the problem. And the conclusion was reached that the shelf that delivers power, the entire shelf was out. And it is going to take, unfortunately, it's been a delay in getting that shelf replaced. There are several factors that relate to that. First of all, it's extraordinarily rare for an entire shelf to go out. The technicians I spoke with decades of experience, have never seen this particular outage. But then beyond that, while the Peregain system used for this area is common, it's a 303 system, the shelf itself is unusual. We didn't have one in stock either in the local area or in our warehouse where we keep spare parts. Our vendor didn't have it in stock either used or new. We've also, as we've converted out these systems in recent years, harvested parts for reuse in situations like this. And we didn't find a matching shelf that would work in this particular situation. So we were left with going out to vendors, look for, every option that we could find. And unfortunately, the option that where we could get this shelf replaced and, we found it, but unfortunately we're not going to receive delivery until July 12th. And so whether that has to do with the rarity of this piece of equipment or whether it has to do with, more general issues with supply chain, I'm not sure, but we haven't been able to get it that quickly. Certainly hear your concerns about communication. We have had Patty Moss Miller of our consumer advocacy group reach out to every affected customer to inform them the status of the repair. She's been successful in reaching all of them, with the exception of one customer where the phone numbers we have on file are disconnected, and at least the mobile numbers, and one of them, the mailbox is full. We're also investigating the communication process with customers associated with the repair tickets that went in, and share the concern that you've expressed. Our process is when we receive three repair tickets that all look to be grouped in the same area, that they're consolidated into an outage. And all future repair tickets that are consolidated into the outage, the customer should be informed of the fact of the outage and the nature of what is going on. We have listened to every phone call that was made associated with this situation, and it's clear that there are some training issues that we are going to undertake. There's a system in place that notifies the agents that there is an outage going on. but it looks like that was either not noticed or not followed by those agents in these particular instances. With respect to the first customers, and in this case, it was four customers that called in repair tickets before it was grouped into an outage, probably due to just the timing. I was told that our technicians have reached out to those individuals to communicate with them. So, you know, it's clear that there's some communication issues that have popped up early. And, you know, we've attempted to rectify that as best we can. We have, we've tried to every option we can think of to try and speed up the repair of this outage, but we are not, we're still where we are as far as the timing.
Jason, can I ask a quick question, but if you don't mind? Rather than looking for what seems to be an obsolete replacement part, and just from what I'm hearing on the surface, I know there's always more to it, wouldn't another option be just to modernize the shelf, bring it up to date from a technology standpoint, so you're not looking for another obsolete part down the road? Or is that cost prohibitive, or is the timing just not conducive to that approach right now?
My understanding is that the timing's not conducive to that approach. Getting these customers back up and running, replacing the part is the quickest option for doing that.
Do you have a long-term plan to upgrade that equipment then?
I don't know the answer to that, but you know, this is equipment that's, you know, been very successfully used over a very wide area, and this is an extraordinarily rare outage. So whether upgrading this particular equipment makes sense or not, that's not an option that I've heard from our technical people as one that makes sense.
With regard to the customer service complaints, I'm trying to understand how your customer service complaint taking is set up. Is this some contract thing, possibly even overseas somewhere, where you're going to train some people now and then they'll never be the ones to take another call from North Dakota again? Or do you have an area up here that has its own call center and people answering them? Or what do we do to assure, because we don't have staff to be your customer complaint people, and yet that's what it becomes when something significant like that happens. And so how do we make sure that not only do you get this training out now, but that it's kept up with and that we avoid these kinds of problems again?
Yeah, I share the concern. We don't have unique North Dakota call personnel. However, as they're located in a variety of different places. The screen and what to do, this isn't that unusual of a situation. And this is something that our people should be getting right. And so this is something we're going to really look hard at to make sure that this sort of thing is not a regular occurrence.
And are these people that are CenturyLink employees, or is it some firm that does this and they answer a CenturyLink call and then next thing they're answering something about somebody's car warranty or something?
I'm getting to the edge of my personal knowledge. I believe they could either be CenturyLink employees or contracted out, but I do believe that they solely work on CenturyLink calls.
Jason, it seems like if the training is a big issue, when something like this happens, couldn't a lot of utilities use automated calls with like the same information just going out to everybody. So at least the basic information that customers are getting on the front end is accurate. Why aren't you guys doing that?
There are certainly a lot of things that we're attempting to do to improve customer service through automated means. And that is, something that is in the mix as far as a longer term solution to this. I don't have any specific plans I can report sitting here today, but certainly note that as a possibility, and that may be the best way to address this.
Well, are companies like CenturyLink kind of in a disadvantage when it comes to using automated calls, and that if there's a problem, their phone doesn't work?
Obviously that is an issue. However, most of our customers, and I think all of them in this instance, have alternate phone numbers on file with us, either mobile phones or work phones. So, that was kind of my first reaction as well, but I do think that that can be a reasonable alternative.
Well, it's hard to imagine a date where automated is actually better than personal customer service, but that does speak to the level of drop in your customer service. It says quite a lot when you could actually have an automated computer calling you and getting better service than somebody who's calling direct, a human being. So I don't know. I don't have any more company questions, but I do have questions for our staff when others are done with company.
This isn't so much of a question, but so the 12th, did you say, is when you expect delivery?
That's when we expect delivery. I think we have in our systems listed as a repair date of the 19th. We'll obviously get it done as quickly as we can. I hear that it's, a couple day project to actually install this equipment.
So with this much lead time, how does a week go by that you would have delivery and then it would just sit around for a week before you install it?
Well, we're going to install it as soon as we receive it. We put down the 19th because we want to beat any expectation. There always could be issues with when it's actually delivered and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, would you commit to keeping us posted if you're notified that the delivery date is changed by the vendor? And then
we will
let us know with progress report to staff or something on the installation if after 2 days it's done, or if you have run into other problems, and just keep us posted on this.
Definitely.
Okay. Jason, going back to the part, and if you said this, I apologize for asking it again, but are you ordering more than one? I understand that it's a very rare occurrence, but in terms of redundancy and backup, would you be ordering two of these, or are they incredibly expensive? I don't have any bearing on the price, but it would seem that having that repetition, that redundancy would be beneficial.
Yeah, I guess I haven't pushed that issue with our network folks. I agree, unless this is a completely unique part, that it probably makes sense to have it on hand in the future.
So should I jump into staff questions? Okay. So Ryan, Victor, Stacy, what tools do we have from an enforcement or penalty standpoint to try to bring about some resolution here?
Sure. I'll start. Ryan can kind of jump in here as needed. So there's a number of sections of both Century Code and our rules that I think touch on this. First is 4921-10.2, which is quality of service. And this kind of speaks to the commission will adopt rules and standards for standards of service. So it's not very specific, but it essentially gives the commission authority to set standards. So again, this comes from the law, 4921-10.2. Touch briefly on the penalty, which also comes from law 4907-01.1. Any person who violates commission statute or any statute, commission order, rule, is subject to a civil penalty not to exceed $5,000. There's no other qualifiers on that, so it's unclear if that could be applied daily or if that's a single amount. Another piece of...
So on that one, we could determine whether we think it's daily per customer or however, and have in the past viewed it that way, correct?
Well, to my knowledge, we haven't issued penalties for this in the past, at least certainly not
maybe
since
not
I've
on
here.
Telecom, but in other areas we have.
Right. Possibly. And I think legal would have to weigh in if we can do it on a daily basis.
Okay.
Or if I don't want to really speak to whether it's one and done or if it can be daily. But I think that's a very good thought process.
Okay.
Another kind of area of commission authority, 4902-04, power of commission to regulate services. Refer the commission shall find, there's a whole list of things, after hearing that service for any public utility is inadequate, the commission shall determine the just, reasonable, safe, proper, adequate to be observed, furnished, constructed, enforced, or employed. The commission shall prescribe rules and regulations for the performance of the service. So essentially kind of further setting up the commission can determine something is inadequate and what the rules are. That's just a further definition. Then we have, so this is our rules 690905, which is standard service for telecom. There is not anywhere in here. So one of the big things is we talk about adequate service. Adequate service is not defined anywhere. I don't believe the commission is precluded from defining what that means, but at present it is not in law or rule defined. And I further looked even within FCC rules, because FCC is kind of what started this whole thing back in 34, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the same kind of adequate service at reasonable rates. They have not defined that I've been able to dig up what that means. The one thing that I think this could very easily fall within, so 6909-0507, customer trouble reports. When a customer service is found to be out of order or a customer reports trouble, local exchange telecommunications company shall test its facilities to determine if the problem is with the local exchange company's facilities. If it is, the local exchange company shall correct the trouble promptly. Promptly is not defined, but it's maybe an easier term to define than adequate.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I've been able to find in our laws. And
well,
rules.
Adequate may not be well defined, but I think we could agree that adequate means you should have service. Like, that certainly wouldn't be adequate not having any.
That doesn't sound crazy at all. I would agree. I feel like adequate is something that it's probably hard to define. It's one of those, you know, when you see it kind of a thing. And I would agree. I think you need to have service for it to be adequate at a minimum.
Right. On the customer trouble reports, can you go through that one again, please, Victor?
When a customer service is found to be out of order or a customer reports trouble, the local exchange telecommunications company shall test its facilities to determine if the problem is with the local exchange company's facilities. If it is, the local exchange company shall correct the trouble promptly. There may be no charge to the customer to test to determine if the problem is on the local exchange company's facilities or to correct the problem on the local exchange company's facilities. A local exchange company shall inform a customer in advance what charges will be assessed to identify or correct a problem located on the customer's facilities.
And then is there anything further where it says if they don't, or does that just then go back to the penalty provision that you
I think it would go back to the penalty provision. There's no other, that's okay. The end of that section of rules.
So then it goes back to the adequate service and penalties?
Correct.
Okay.
One other, so this isn't necessarily in our laws or rules, but the FCC does have rules and guidelines and things like that. I think there would be the potential for the commission to submit a complaint to the FCC if it so chose for inadequate service being provided, and then it becomes the FCC's case at that point, obviously, but the FCC has a little bit more clear guidance on penalties. They can actually penalize, I think it's $500 per day. It specifies that time period. But again, that's not necessarily our proceeding, but it's something we could initiate if the commission chose.
Okay. Brian, do you have any thoughts on these various options?
I guess as far as the question on per day or per customer or something like that, the penal provisions, it's a violation of statute, commission order, or commission rule. So we would have to find that each one of those was a violation of the statute and not that the act or the entirety of it all is what violates the statute. So to get into multiple violations, I think would be easier than to get into a fine that would be like compounding daily or something like that. That is provided, but that's in the that's for pipeline violation safety standards. And so our section is limited to, or the other section that's applicable here is just for the $5,000, and it says any statute, commission order, or commission rule which applies to the matters. So it's all gonna depend on how it's broken down. Is each one considered a violation, or is it quality of service is out because all these people are out, not just because each one is out. So it would depend more on that, but it looks like a $5,000 fine is probably, in this case, maybe more attributable to the whole problem than just a separate problem. But that doesn't mean if there isn't multiple problems that each one of those would be applicable to the civil penalty that we have to issue.
Okay. So, Randy, I know you've thought about this.
A lot. And the next one even more.
Right.
In this case, I can imagine the frustration of these 21 or 22 customers. But I do also understand the company side of it. And, I'm somewhat sympathetic to the fact that in this era, when a lot of the manufacturers have been competing against the federal government for employees and such for the last year, there are a lot of things in a lot of industries where you can't get parts, and there are big delays, and so I'm not inclined to want to go wild with the penalty on it. As far as the outage, I'm actually more upset about the customer service side of it than anything. But I think a moderate violation is in order. By the way, question for the staff, I guess. Is there a potential violation of anything in our laws or rules as far as that's clear, as far as the not having trained customer service people and misleading all these people into following up with us?
I'm not aware of anything. I haven't specifically looked for that. I will kind of, as we're talking here, see
so
be
more on the actual outage, but I'm not looking for a big penalty on this case. I'm looking more for it just getting fixed in July when they can get the part. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't disagree on the challenge of getting the part, but that, you know, I'd feel a lot differently about it if they had just handled it with their customers, which that is something they can and should control, and it's been an ongoing problem for years in North Dakota. And, you know, I just, I understand Quest is in a tough position in the state, but that's not my fault. That's not our fault. That there's nothing we can do about that. The company still has responsibilities and they need to live up to them. And I have a responsibility too, to hold them accountable for living up to their part of their job, and they aren't. So I definitely think we need to do something to get their attention again. And I think that a penalty is the way to do that on this case. And I would do it as, I mean, the penalty is already soft at $5,000. So I would do it at the maximum possible that we can on this, because, I mean, $5,000 doesn't even make them blink. So that's where I would go with this one.
Did you have any thoughts, Commissioner Gracias?
I'll have to think on what would be appropriate. You know, and this, obviously, resolving this particular problem quickly is of the utmost importance. Everyone understands that. I'm just stating the obvious. In your annual report, you are required to list 6 different items, pieces of information when you have an outage of more than 30 minutes, which this one is, obviously. The 5th one is steps taken to prevent a similar situation in the future. That's really key for me in terms of, is there a second part on the way? We asked the question about potentially modernizing the equipment. Good customer service obviously is critical, but any company is less dependent when these outages are resolved quickly versus a delay like we've seen. So that's more of a forward-looking item and approach, but I think a very critical element in all of this. What's the plan going forward should something like this happen again, which invariably, inevitably, it will.
So I think I will work on some type of an order, but our next meeting is the 14th, which is only 2 days after their expected arrival date of the part. So I think it probably won't be on this case for the next meeting. It'll probably be for the one after that when we see how this has played out with actually making the repairs.
Yeah. And you're going to, I mean, we'll need our legal team, and they're tied up with some other big things right now, too. So.
Okay.
That's fine. That works for me. And if there's some interim steps to get to an order with the penalty, we can have a work session or something else if needed. All right. So do you want to move to the other case then, Randy?
Yep.
Do we have to stop and start, or how are we doing? Are we separating these two?
They were noticed together, so I think we can do them all together.
Okay.
Right, Brian?
Okay. So now we're getting into the, I don't know what we call it, the Gerbig case or the... Amadon case probably is a better, because there are other customers in the Gerbigs, I guess. So this has lingered on, in my opinion, too long. And in reviewing Ms. Gerbig's assessment of what the company offered, I find it understandable that she would not be inclined to do that, but I'd like to hear the company's side of what your proposed resolution is.
And if, from what has been offered, if there's been any more contemplation, if you have anything else in mind. But I do feel strongly that you have an obligation to serve these customers with adequate service. And so, Jason, if it's going to be you again, someone tell us where you're at with this situation and how we get this resolved quickly.
So this is Jason Topp from CenturyLink once again. You know, we had a, we're last before the commission on February 4th. We immediately thereafter, you know, sort of our understanding was is we were going to put in this HughesNet service. The customers were going to try it out, see if this was an acceptable alternative or not, and then we would go from there. There were a number of concerns raised right away that, you know, we have attempted repeatedly to try and address those concerns and just to kind of tick through some of those. You know, the customers wanted a trial period and they wanted CenturyLink to act as a conduit working with the ordering process. We feel like we address that. Customers wanted a local contractor to install a service. We agreed to do that. And there are concerns about number porting. We confirmed that they could port numbers to HughesNet, but recommended that they keep their numbers with CenturyLink, get new ones with HughesNet, and if the service was acceptable, port them at that time. One of the customers didn't have a credit card, and we worked on a way to go ahead and place the order without a credit card. There were concerns about the pricing plan for voice only service, that the price would expire after 6 months and then go up thereafter. We've offered to, you know, at various times trying to be responsive to the requests that are made, we've offered a 6 month plan, a 1 year plan, and a 2 year plan in order to ensure that pricing didn't go up, and we've offered to pay for that, that service. There was concern about battery backup and the situation where power might go out. We've offered a battery backup system in order to address that particular concern. There were concerns about cost of installation. Again, we have offered to cover that. Two of the three customers already have HughesNet service for internet, and so really, that was only a significant issue with one of the customers. There was concern that they wanted to make sure that CenturyLink was, you know, continued to be in contact with them and responsible. And, you know, we've offered our, you know, we've offered a specific contact with a private number who's very familiar with this situation, has been reaching out to them regularly, and we think we've addressed that. And they're also early on, and then in the most recent communication, there were concerns about one of the customers has to do a pacemaker update or sort of a data transfer. You know, we did communicate early on in the process, but this has taken so much time as this has been considered that maybe that had been forgotten, that we think that those issues can be worked through just a simple analog to digital converter, and that's something that can be fixed, you know, can be addressed, but it depends on the specific phone unit that's at issue.
Well, who would... Explain the specific phone unit. Who determines whether they would have the right phone unit that it would work?
We would work with them to make sure that gets addressed. There are just some technical characteristics that our people needed in order to figure out the exact right converter that would work. So we have, right away, there was sort of a request that what we proposed be put in writing. We did that. There were some concerns about that. We added clarifying language, hoping to that would resolve the particular concerns. And we've tried to keep commission staff updated on sort of those communications over time. The most recent communication from Mrs. Gerbig doesn't, the issues, again, are this medical communication, which we think can be addressed. The electrical power, we've offered battery backup associated with that. And I don't know if the customers just ultimately are not interested in HughesNet as an alternative and won't accept it. They also, there has been, apparently they have done some work to try and figure out an antenna cell phone system. And if that's the route that they want to go to try and get this addressed, we're willing to work with them and, willing to do that as well. We feel like we're doing, we're addressing the concerns, and it's unclear whether sort of the position is that just ultimately this type of service is unacceptable to the customers, or because we've tried to address every concern that's been raised.
Does your offer have a expiration date on it? So I'm assuming that HughesNet service costs more than CenturyLink service does here in town. And my understanding is that your offer would be that essentially the company would absorb that rather than put in laying a lot of new line. But does that come with an expiration date that then in a year or two that they are relieving the company of your responsibility to serve them? Or would this be an ongoing solution as long as you are the CPCN in the area?
So our proposal was to have the customers try out this service to, we kind of use best efforts to keep current facilities up during that trial period. And then work from there. I fully expect that this commission would hold us to our obligation to serve our customers. But our proposal and the way we thought about going about this and was to do this for a period of time. We could pay for the service for a period of time. If this is an acceptable alternative, we might at some point propose that the customers start paying for it. But, we haven't gotten to square one of having this service tried out in the first place.
So you are agreeable then to some of this I didn't realize, and so maybe I misunderstood. You're agreeable to offering them this service with the expectation that, A, there's not a time limit that agreeing to the trial will relieve the company of obligation to serve, that there would not be installation costs for them, that it would be something that the pacemaker issue can be resolved
and that there would be battery backup. And that porting the number thing, I think that we can easily figure out. So you're agreeable to those things that I just said then, right?
That's correct.
Does that resolve most of the concerns with this? That
it did, but particularly the all of the correspondence that I've seen, and I did talk with Mrs. Gerbig just yesterday again to make sure that I understood her concerns. The offer has been that we've seen they would pay for 1 year. I did not realize there was any kind of a offer to continue paying after that, and that was one of Mrs. Gerbig's big concerns, was they'll pay for it a year, and then, like you said, they'll be off the hook, we'll be a HughesNet customer, and they'll be off the hook and never have to worry about us again. So that, I don't think, was understood by me or her.
What I'm hearing now is that our order would probably make clear that this is a year trial, but at that point,
if it works,
we're back into violation if it's just not working.
That's what I just heard now, but yeah. That is different than the way I interpreted in the past also. And I know Mrs. Gerbig wasn't interpreting it like that either. The pacemaker issue was still a concern of hers. And the other concern was that she, as was mentioned, she does currently have HughesNet internet. And she said it works and it's the best thing that they can get out there right now, but it's not what you would call reliable, she said. So she's just already under the impression that the internet line already doesn't work, you know, all the time, then the phone's not gonna work all the time. And so she doesn't consider that to be a very good option. It would be nice to try it out though, to see.
I'm thinking
because we don't know.
I'm thinking too, it might be worth a try, because I know sometimes what I want to do on my computer doesn't work, and you know, I'm sometimes not 100% sure whether it's the computer or the internet service or my router.
The operator.
I thought we were on the same team here.
I mean, I know that's operator error for me a lot.
And so maybe, you know, the phone would have fewer of those things
nice,
that can
yeah.
be problematic. And
seems like to me on this one, and Stacy and I have talked about this, we can't get anywhere if we don't try it. So we have to try it, and that doesn't commit the Gerbigs to anything. I mean, trying it is trying it. Mm-hmm. See how it works. See if these issues can be addressed, and then just somehow assure them that trying it doesn't mean that you're stuck with this for a year and then you're going to be paying for it after that. I mean, that's like step two and three down the road.
That's not the impression that she had or was given up to this point. I can tell you that, because we specifically talked about that yesterday, and that was one of her things that was holding her back, was she felt she was being forced into, you know, signing up for a year, and then whether it worked or not, she'd be stuck. And then if it did work after that, CenturyLink would, you know, turn her over to HughesNet and be gone.
And I apologize if that's the impression she had. We thought we had communicated otherwise, but regardless.
And I know the other, I know the other two customers aren't technically part of this complaint, so I don't know that we have to specifically address their concerns, but Dorm Henders is the other one, the more elderly gentleman that doesn't have internet at his house even and doesn't have a credit card. He is not interested in HughesNet just because he, like I said, he doesn't have internet. He doesn't even own a credit card. Right now he is not living at the residence due to a recent accident he had. So I don't know what his solution would be. He wants his phone to work. That's what he just tells me. I just want my phone to work.
So. Well, and I don't know where the boundaries are in terms of what we can
or need to order. But I do think that we have to have some understanding that you have to be able to at least try and use the technology that's available. And I'm not real inclined to make the company put in, you know, new underground lines to reach these customers when there are some other solutions that, and technology is evolving and some stuff is becoming obsolete. And so, I mean, we have to recognize that too. And I mean, there is a limit to what I'm willing to order the company to do in this case. I think we need to try this HughesNet and see how it works and then go from there. I mean, it might not be the end-all solution, but we don't know that until we get it in place.
Jason, you mentioned that they were exploring some other options, and I believe it's with Kohler Communications out in Dickinson. Have you talked to anybody out there? Do you know what system they're talking about? I'd like to do some follow-up on it. I don't know if you have that information or if we need to get it from them.
Yeah, let me see if I can get my notes here. Yeah, it's Kohler Communications is the company. Initially, what we got was a description of costs that included a booster kit, an additional antenna, cell phone costs, and a phone plan. But the most recent communication suggested that those are just sort of for swag prices and may not include everything. So, you know, we're interested in this option. You know, we'd be willing to work through that. You know, we think that HughesNet would be a good option as well. But, you know, we want to work with the customers to try and get through this. I mean, this is a tough issue in the narrow sense as well as in the broad sense as to how to deal with these sorts of situations.
I'm not at all familiar with Kohler. Is that a cellular thing or a satellite thing, or how do they even operate?
And this is something that the customers have pursued themselves. And as I understand it, it's a cellular thing and it's sort of additional antennas. We've asked for more detail associated with that, but we haven't received it yet.
Jason, I know I have a little bit of information. It's Commissioner's Andy Schreiner with CenturyLink. I looked up Kohler Communications because I wasn't familiar with them. They appear to be a two-way radio operation, services operation out of Dickinson. And they do some boosting or have some equipment that can boost cell phone coverage. And it appears that's what the Mrs. Gerbig was proposing in her email.
Well, I'm not completely ruling out at some point even an order that would require underground, but I think there are better alternatives for the company. I know the company that I have service with at home, until they did their fiber to the home project, had replaced some old area with some transmitters or something that were on poles, and it was far cheaper until they got to the fiber project. I could imagine regular copper or potentially fiber being strung from somewhere where there is service, along with, I'm sure there's a power line that's going to each of these locations, maybe working with the electric co-ops out there. Maybe it's HughesNet, maybe it's Kohler. I think our order and no matter who you are, you don't get to necessarily have a choice in like what route someone's mm-hmm. gonna take to get you your service, mm-hmm. but the company that serves your area just has the obligation right. to provide adequate service. And from what I'm hearing of Jason's explanation, it sounds to me, unless I think of something later or staff thinks of something, like it covers most of the points that would seem like adequate service to at least try and then see if it turns out to be inadequate or not. And so perhaps we just need to do an order that lays out some of these things, that this is what it will be, and whether the company goes with HughesNet or Kohler or whoever, but try it out. And then if the people don't want it, then, well, then I guess they've chosen to not want it. But,
or if it's inadequate.
Well, but first they have to try it,
right,
to show that it's inadequate. But
I mean, would we order that, or would we have them try it and then? I mean, I guess procedurally, I'm open to whatever is the best route to tie. At least, well, get the trial period going.
I think an order is an order, because I mean, there's a violation here. I mean, these people were provided inadequate service for a long, long time before the complaint case even ever came in. And so sure, I, at some point, am going to propose an order with a penalty on it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the resolution to that, though, could be that within some time frame that service be offered that is adequate. And I guess it's a good question whether we put the details of this in there or not, but
maybe you can work with legal on thinking through that process and how you provide an off-ramp for reviewing it after, to see how the service works, and then, you know, keeping in mind that there might be additional.
It could be like progress reports required or something like that.
But however you guys decide.
I don't think that the customers just get a veto authority over whatever the proposal is either. If the company invests in something that they think is going to be adequate, you kind of need to try it, and then if it turns out to be inadequate, then the company wasted some money and some time, is probably going to get another penalty. So there's an incentive not to try things that are inadequate, and give one of these a run, and like I say, I think it's the company's choice of what procedure they undertake to try and solve it. But I just think there needs to be a deadline on it, and they need to try something.
I'm good with that. I don't know how you feel about it.
I think I would echo similar thoughts to yours, Chair Fedorchak, and that would be seeing if this is a viable solution, and it will be a test of sorts. If an order is crafted along the way, I don't know how complete it can really be until we know if is it called HughesNet? HughesNet works. So I don't have a strong feeling either way in terms of the direction of the order, but that will be a looming question, is whether or not there's a long-term solution that'll work for the Gervigs and whomever else might be affected.
Well, I think what you mentioned is important, just going back to the adequate service being the standard.
Okay, I'll work with staff on getting something put together. I'm not sure if on this case, if I had my choice. I mean, it's drug on so long, and it was so bad before we even ever had the hearing. I really want to move this along. I don't know if because of the other cases that we have pending for the 14th. I don't know if I hope to get this on, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Staff, you have what you need to go on? Go by?
I believe so.
I think I have one more point to make, since this will be our thought this is not really, not a point, it's a thought. And I should have brought it up on the last one, but it just occurred to me. But it's applicable for both, but we're not on the previous case number. We're on this one, but I think it would be applicable. When a company is fined, the money lands in the state coffers. And I don't know from a legal standpoint if this is possible, and again, it might be a little more applicable to the Aminia outage, but conceptually, the state collects the money. Those customers that experience the outage have no benefit from that. Well, minuscule benefit in terms of tax burden, which it's minuscule, and they'll never see it. If it were possible for the company to work on a future credit, the same dollars or whatever the dollar amounts are, benefit the customers that have experienced the outages, the company has to pay either way. But instead of the money coming into the state of North Dakota, it goes to those directly affected in a different channel. And I don't know if that's something that would have to be voluntary on the company's part.
I think you're correct there. I don't think we would have the authority to necessarily order them to do that, but they could definitely listen and voluntarily do it.
Right. So food for thought.
And they do, as a standard practice, just, you know, credit the bills back while they're out. So they're,
right.
Yeah,
but I'm
so they're not
about
paying.
A future.
Right.
It's goodwill for the company to say, you know what, you've experienced these outages. Customers certainly appreciate and like that. And again, we're not just collecting the money at the state level that goes to fixing a pothole somewhere. It helps the customers. But food for thought.
I'm thinking maybe we should start a telecom company because we got great customer service already and great ideas on how to retain customers. And we could maybe make this work.
One thought there. The penalty provisions say the commission may, where's the language in there, may compromise the penalty, kind of meaning like we do on damage prevention cases, for example, we may suspend a portion of it. That could be an incentive to the company as a kind of an idea.
Sure.
If you want to issue multiple penalties for different violations and say, well, if after the period of 1 year or 2 years or whatever you want to do, you know, some portion of this is suspended, which you provided you provide adequate service, you wouldn't have to pay the suspended portion. But if you're not, that can come into play. Just a thought for it.
We did kind of do that in the Belfield case where we didn't do a fine because they agreed to invest in improving the system in that area. So we had looked at a fine, but then the company came back and said they were going to invest to upgrade that system, and so then we didn't do the fine because they were investing the money in the system.
I like the concept of the penalty doing something more than just coming to the state, but I do have a little bit of concern about setting up a system that might entice if I understood you correctly, the customers would be getting the penalty dollars kind of in a credit. Is that what you envisioned?
Yeah, something to that effect, where they receive several months of service at,
yeah,
credited back to them. And I realize it can't be directly linked in terms of lieu of a fine, but it would influence my decision if they came back with a package saying, what about this instead? Because I realize we can't essentially force that to happen, but just from my perspective, I think it's beneficial to any company to take that approach because the customers are a lot happier. They don't get a lot of satisfaction over, well, good, they were fined and it's done. And if the monetary totals really aren't that different, depending on what the fine amount would be to begin with, I think it goes, actually, I think it's very linear. The benefit goes to really where it should go.
Yeah, does it incentivize complaints, however? I mean, that's the
only if inadequate service is provided, and that's a legitimate complaint, no matter what the scenario.
Yeah. I guess see what you guys come up with. The level of fine that I'm thinking of might be higher than the amount of money I would feel comfortable returning to customers in some sort of free service, but maybe a portion of it or something like that. Just thoughts? Anything
do you
else?
Think, do you think either of you will want a work session on this, or that we just, based on what we've heard here, we're gonna order?
I guess I don't. I wouldn't know until I saw the order.
Okay. We'll proceed, see how much we can get done in the other cases we've already taken on for the 12th, or for the 14th. And
all right. So that concludes our work sessions on case number PU-20-442 and, what's the other one? Case number 21-237. Thank you.
I don't have that notice with me. Wasn't the Amenia one informal?
They both were. Oh, did I say work session?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So we have to clarify that.
All right.
For the evidence.
Yes. So does anyone object to the discussions today, the tape, basically, because there was no presentations being used as part of the formal record on which a decision will be based? Brian?
No objection.
Jason?
No objection.
All right, thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that. Okay, with that detail, then I think we can conclude this informal and look forward to resolution soon on these issues. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for being with us.